For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I am so excited that for 2024, Your Brand Amplified is proudly sponsored by one of my favorite platforms, Simplified. This AI-driven platform is a game changer for design and video content. With Simplified, I can effortlessly transform lengthy videos, such as my podcast, into engaging, shareable clips and streamline workflows with an intuitive subtitle generator. For designers out there, you can explore the AI-powered image generator, create compelling presentations, and design eye-catching YouTube thumbnails with ease. Revolutionize your creative process at Simplified.com with a free trial. Now let's dive into today's guest.
Welcome to Your Brand Amplified, the podcast where we interview marketers, publicists, and brands to learn their stories, what makes them tick, and tips and tricks that make a difference.
I am so thrilled to have an amazing counterpart from overseas with me today, Nicholas Kuhne. You are a master of multiple brands. You have a podcast. You have so many things that you do. if you're listening to this, you didn't see. You just went, stop. And you started in South Africa, but now your company is in many, many countries. So I'd love for you to talk about your journey because you're also a teacher. You do so many different things. And I'm also a multi-hyphenate. So I'm here for it. And I'm so excited to share your journey on my podcast as you have shared mine on yours.
Well, it's a great pleasure being with you tonight. I'm actually in Stavanger in Norway at the moment. So I'm teaching classes in a different campus this week. I'm normally based in Oslo. But yeah, a quite interesting story. So I'm what you'd call a true Anglo-Saxon. So we're going to go back a little bit. So my family are half English, half German, and have been in South Africa for many, many generations. So yeah, and my great-grandfather actually worked at JWT in Cape Town in, must have been the 30s or something like 30s and 40s. So very early on. So it must be in the genes. And my grandfather is a very famous Afrikaans writer. My father is also a writer. So there's a lot of writing and education in the family. But I was born in a place called Bloemfontein, which is where, if any of you know your history, is where J.R.R. Tolkien was born. So we share the birthplace that of the Lord of the Rings author. Yeah, I grew up in Johannesburg, which is 2,000 meters above sea level. So that's really high. So we've got very thin air, just similar to my thin hairline. And yeah, went to school there and got a scholarship to go to the UK to go and play cricket and sing in the choir. Wow. Came back to South Africa, all excited about sort of the new dispensation there, and studied my marketing and advertising degree at the University of Johannesburg with the most marvelous lectures. And I think that made me want to teach later on as well, because I just had such a great time, and specifically in the marketing classes. But when I got out of class, I wasn't the top of my class, I'm afraid. So I didn't get my first job immediately. I started selling computer software for 3 months until I got a marvelous job at a below-the-line agency. From there, and that was doing everything from putting the Spider-Man designs on Kellogg's cornflakes boxes and things like that. But I went into sort of my more passion area, which is market research. So I joined a market research company, which was part of JWT. And then I was moved up to Nigeria. This is in about 2004. So yeah, 2004. No cell phones, no KFC. No nice things there. Oh, and it just blew my mind. It was the Wild West. And I've got an abiding love for Nigeria from that period. But I ran the largest youth research studies in Africa. Cool. And came back to South Africa. And at that stage, South Africa hadn't opened up to the world at that stage. So there weren't terribly many people with exposure to working in Africa. Mm-hmm. And having spent quite a bit of time in Nigeria, I joined a company called Nando's, which is a fast food company, if anyone likes their spicy chicken. And I was sent around the world to India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka to go and set up the new branches there, and was involved in building, honestly, one of the world's best fast food restaurants. And that taught me a lot in terms of branding and exposed me to quite a lot of the world, especially the emerging market. Came back to South Africa, joined Interbrand, which is a big brand agency. Then I moved to MTV to head up marketing. So I was the head of marketing for MTV Viacom in Africa.
Wow.
Launched Comedy Central, did roasts, did all of those exciting things. But it wasn't for me. I'm more of a classical music aficionado. Went back to Interbrand and I thought, wait a minute, I can do this myself. And the reason for that is I saw a lot of brands or businesses come to us and say that were emerging market brands, so from Africa, India, etc. But they didn't have the budget to work with Interbrand.
Right.
And I thought, it's a bit of a pity. We don't just need Coca-Cola's. We don't just need General Motors. We don't just need these large organizations. I would love to use these skills I've learned in building brands across by using the best in class from Interbrand, JWT, TBWA, etc., and help build brands. And that's where Wunderbrand came about. So that's the long and short of it. And with Wunderbrand, we've opened up and closed in a couple of countries. We've done, you know, over 1,000 projects. We've branded banks, created crests for royalty. We've done a whole range of interesting things. And yeah, started a data science company in Malaysia. And then I'm now teaching in Norway, which is just a great joy for me.
Amazing. What a fantastic breadth of experience you've had. Not only the cultural diversity of working in all of these different countries and being able to apply that for your clients, whether they were in one of those bigger brands or agencies or the clients who've come to you as Wunderbrand, but wow, I'm working for MTV, Viacom, right? Working for Interbrand. My students on the PR and branding side, we use the Interbrand reports to talk about what's going on in the world of brands and how our brands performing against each other in different categories. So obviously they're very well known, but I so appreciate that you have the heart for small businesses and businesses that don't have the big budgets. They don't have the access to the same amount of funding to start, but they are still very important, viable projects and products that we need in the world.
Exactly. And you know, most big brands started out quite small. So you've got to start out somewhere. And there are so many marvelous brands or potential brands in emerging markets that could compete against the Unilevers and so on. Not that I've got anything against Unilever and companies like that, because they provide scale and they can bring prices down. So we've got to think about the end consumer. But I think it's important that local brands don't just get absorbed by one of the things that I've experienced when I've been around the world and over my last 20 years is seeing how local businesses, local brands have just vanished and been taken over by the big international brands. And it's quite sad going to a country where there were local brands and you go there a couple of years later and all of those small mom and pop shops have vanished and they've been overtaken by the high street brand. So you lose a bit of the local feel of countries when the big international brands come in there. So I wanted to try and mitigate that a little bit by helping them build their own, make some of those brands survive.
I'm going to ask a random question before we get into some of the intricacies with starting your own company versus being an employee before. Creating crests for royalty, right? Is this new royalty? How did that come about? Because we always think about crests that have been around for centuries.
Well, in this case, it was partly a rebrand. So it was for a Nigerian Oba. So an Oba, it's basically like the king of a specific area in Nigeria, in this case, part of Lagos. And, you know, you've got to try and find some of the elements that they don't have the typical heraldry that the UK and the European aristocracy have. So they've got to build their own in order to have sort of legitimacy and be able to have a nice logo, which the royal crests basically were in the olden days. So that was quite fun going and meeting these, you know, royal folks and dealing with them. So it was quite an experience.
I can imagine.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Now, I do want to ask about the transition, because now, obviously, you've had great success. You've been able to parlay this into multiple countries and parts of the world. But what was it like when you left and started your agency? Did you already have some potential clients? You know, did you have to focus on your own brand, your own marketing to get there, which often we neglect because we're focused on every other part and working on our clients' brands instead of our own?
So the interesting thing about leaving my job, some folks leave because they've got a marvelous idea. Some people leave because they have built up capital and are now ready to start again. Mine was partly driven by hate and and revenge, and partly because I'm a terrible employee. So there was that. So I did have one or two little side jobs that I was looking at, but I got to a stage where I didn't agree with the direction of the business that I was working at. So I thought, I can do it better. Let me show you how you should do it. And it was a tough road in the beginning. I just had my first child. And I think with a lot of entrepreneurs, this happens when you do try and do everything at once. Get a house, have a child, a dog, move cities, all of that all comes at once. So you like making things complicated. But I started out with a clear idea with what I wanted. And I had a very high self-concept of myself. And I think a lot of folks, when they start a business, they try and undercut the competition. And they try and go in as cheaply as possible. Luckily, with my track record working with these big international brands and having this sort of pedigree behind me, I was able to be a little bit gung-ho when I went to clients. And I had one of my first clients. I went to them with the costing for a rebrand. And they said, "Oh, this is expensive." So I said, "It's okay. If this is too expensive for you, let me introduce you to a more budget-friendly agency." And that obviously is a death note to a client who's got ego and that. So they said, no, this is fine. We'll spend the money. But my first client, we started out with, I think, about $500 a month was my first invoice. And after 2 years, that was about $500,000 a month. No. Sorry, I lie, $50,000 a month. So it went up went up quite a lot. Yeah. So it's important to show that you can deliver and not try and squeeze all the juice out of the orange at one go. And you've got to have sort of some loss leaders. So in the beginning, you're not necessarily going to make money. It's great if you can, but you want to build up credibility and just start adding services and adding services. And I think the important thing that I learned and the thing that I try and tell folks when they're starting their own business is try not to be all things to all people. Mm-hmm. If you are going and offering digital marketing services, you cannot offer websites, SEO. You cannot offer all of those things because people aren't looking for all of those things. They are looking for a specific solution to a problem they've got. So if you say, "I'm the Pinterest specialist," or "I'm a TikTok specialist agency," say that. And if it's in the healthcare or hospitality industry, say, "I'm a TikTok specialist in the healthcare industry." You will still get other clients, but those folks in those particular industries are then going to buy from you because you are specializing and saying, "I'm offering this specifically for you." Mm-hmm. And lots of folks, I had a podcast call yesterday with a very smart chap, but he offered absolutely everything and he knew absolutely everything. And I just thought, it's too much. You have no specialization. You can't offer the kitchen sink. In the beginning, you've got to start with a very clear proposition. And mine was to help build emerging market brands. That was what my focus was. And it worked out to be quite successful.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm a person who's done a lot of different things in marketing. So I've been a generalist because sometimes I've been a launch marketing specialist and I've had to message to potential advertisers, but also to consumers and do different types of events for each and sometimes merge them. I've done digital, I've done PR, and I've done a lot of brand work. And when I had my PR firm, I quickly realized that those clients that were coming to me did need other solutions. And so I did incorporate them in, but it was also, to your point, very hard. I had team members who could do things, but it was hard for me to then be able to track everybody's deliverables and make sure they were all doing exactly what they're supposed to and that everybody was happy. Now I'm in an interesting position where I'm teaching, I'm podcasting, So I'm primarily podcast branding and teaching workshops and things like that, and teaching at university as well. And I teach in a different way, probably because I'm not teaching digital skills from being somebody who works in those ecosystems day in and day out, but I've tested them all as a user, as an influencer, or as somebody who works with all those people in agencies and knows what to deliver. So I love your perspective, because I think that for some types of clients, maybe it's better for them to go to one or perhaps two agencies so that they're not having, I'm thinking of workforce development, education. It's hard for them to have to go to several different agencies because they don't have time. They don't have the big budget, yeah. Right? And they're already, so it's hard to get them on the phone for one agency phone call.
But the point I want to get across here is that you've got to have your Big Mac that people come to you for. You can still have the Chick-fil-A. You can still have your fillet of fish, and you can still have desserts and all of that. So you should offer that, but that should not be why they're coming to you. That is if they say, in the discussions, I need a website. We do offer that. Here's, let me introduce you to XYZ. So it's just that when you're starting out, you have to, I think, be very pinpoint accurate in terms of what you're offering. Right. And all of the other things people have buy as an add-on, that will happen. But if you just all things to all people, you're going to have a very difficult time trying to create a list of potential clients.
Exactly.
And I find that if you focus on one particular area, even if it's not the right one, at least you reduce the world of potential leads down to a very small segment that you can aim at, try and win at. If we don't win, go on to another segment. So that's pretty much the point I want to make. And it ties into what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, you said it a little more eloquently. So thank you. What is it like to run a company that exists in multiple countries? Because I also know there are different cultures, different customs. A gesture in one country might be something that is profanity in another culture.
Well, not just in different countries, in the same country, you will have differences as well. So in Nigeria, for example, you've got the Christian South and you've got the Muslim North. Mm-hmm. So you can't have an advert with a girl with a strapless top in an advert for Nigeria, because it will inflame the more religious folks up north. Having worked in India and places where the culture is completely different, it's very challenging. And coming from a very sort of Western outlook, I thought my way of doing things is the correct and only way. And I got very annoyed the first couple of times I engaged with folks in other countries, because why don't they come on time? Why don't they listen? Why don't they be honest straight away? And it showed me that I had to be very sensitive of different cultures, and how I think the correct way of doing things is not necessarily the same way that other people do business. So it's been very difficult. I won't lie. It does take time, but I am a very good listener. I'm quite empathetic. So I'm not very aggressive when going for deals and pushing. I try and build relationships. And most of the countries that I've dealt with take relationships quite seriously. So I haven't had to go to China and other places like that, where I think it's just, get business done now. Let's just get down to the brass tacks. I've been quite good at beating around the bush almost.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Forming a relationship where there's a trust, right? And they know that when they do say yes, they're going to be in the best of hands. They're not trying to make a decision really quickly because you're not forcing it.
Well, it's the benefit of sticking around for a while. I think a lot of folks don't get to experience what I have because they've jumped to a new job every 2 years. And if I take an example of one of my clients that we've had for 13 years now, we've built a relationship where they can ask me anything, they know I'm going to deliver, and nothing is a problem. And also, they might pay a little bit late, or they might ask for extra things. Then it doesn't matter, because I know I get paid at the end of the day, and that we've built that relationship. And especially in non-European or non-American markets, that's quite important. being able to build that type of relationship. It doesn't happen with all clients. And I've been lucky that one or two clients have had staff that have stayed for quite a while. But I think that's a rarity. So, yeah, a relationship building, obviously extremely important when running a business, because it's trust built in you as the owner. And that's the other thing as a business owner, is that your personal branding is so important, because at the end of the day, unless you're a Coca-Cola, unless you're a big TBWA or one of these big companies, they are looking at you,
right,
to describe what the business does, how the business operates, and they want you, not necessarily the folks underneath you. And that's the big challenge as you start scaling up in your business.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you're not working the day-to-day for the agency right now because you are teaching, and you said you're teaching, yeah, you teach on different campuses sometimes. What was that transition like, handing the reins over to other people for the day-to-day?
Luckily, I've got a very smart team, and I'm sure I annoy them more than give them value most of the time. So they're very good at what they do. So I come in on the sort of strategic side. I sign the invoices and I do the financial bits and pieces and some of the big thinking pieces.
Totally.
But in terms of finding the right people, it's a great struggle. But once you have found the right team members, you've got to look after them. You've got to give them the ability to make decisions. And I think if you're a person who is a micromanager or too hands-on, sometimes it's difficult to trust your staff to make decisions on your behalf. But luckily, I've built up trust with, again, my staff that have been with me for quite a while, that whatever they say, I listen to.
Nice. Yeah. Did it take a while to get there, though? Were there any times when you made a mistake, you thought somebody would be a golden child hire, and then you went, oh, okay.
My business has had quite a few ups and downs, and I had one particular manager of my business who just took us down the drains, basically, because I had too much trust. Too much trust. So again, it depends on the person. It's also with experience. Can that person actually manage that role? So you've got to understand, you've got to, in the beginning phases, do that handover and that transfer with a lot of dedication and a lot of empathy to see if that person can actually do it. And even though you want to give people a chance, it's better to rather cut the umbilical cord quicker than later in some cases and make hard decisions. I should have listened to my wife. That's the second thing I can mention. She told me so. But you don't always have folks when they are not the owner of a business. They obviously don't. They see it as a salary job.
Mm-hmm.
So you are sort of beholden to them, and they don't put in necessarily as much long-term thinking in the business as yourself. So it's a difficult transition. I think my business hasn't been able to go over that sort of next hump because of leadership. And that, I think, is a challenge that faces lots of businesses. So it's still, Wunderbrand is still primarily me, but I think very successful businesses manage to take that transition with the leadership, but it's difficult. If you look at Apple, if you look at Google, if you look at Tesla, I mean, what happened to those companies when the leadership stand down? So Apple luckily had a relatively good transition, but people still think of Steve Jobs.
Right.
In all of these companies, which are individual based, they are generally the drivers of that organization, and they lose quite a lot of their initial fire and excitement once the founders drop off the scene.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that so much. Al, you have a podcast, and it's number one on Apple Podcasts. Or it has reached number one on Apple, so congratulations in Norway.
Thank you.
That is an amazing feat. So when did you start the podcast, and what did you think of it as a brand extension for yourself to show yourself in a thought leadership position? Or
so I didn't actually want to use my company's name in the podcast title. Such a great name, from startup to Wunderbrand. I started it in August last year. I think it's August or around this. And I've done about 60 interviews to date. And it really was to understand what's happening in the digital marketing and entrepreneurship space now. And I align my podcast talks with what's happening in class, so that if I look at my curriculum and go, okay, we're talking about SEO, we're talking about leadership, we're talking about website design, et cetera. Let me get awesome people in, who are the best at what they do, and let's hear what they've got to say, so that when I speak to my students, I've got some additional information, and they can also listen to the podcast as a sort of a refresher or a light touch into that subject. And as you know, it's not a very big money-making racket being in the podcast world. So it really is networking, meeting with interesting people. And the most important thing for me is to clarify my thinking of where is the industry going? Mm-hmm. Because as you speak, it's like going to confession or going to a psychologist. As you speak, you clarify your thinking and the synapses sort of come together and clarify your thinking. So for me, it's very important to make sure that what I'm saying is actually locked into some kind of truth. I'm not just saying this is branding, this is marketing, and I'm going down a path which is divergent to where the rest of the market is going. So from that perspective, it's a sanity check basically on my marketing thinking.
I love that you said this because just last night, our first night of class for the second section of the semester, the class is about digital content production and distribution and rights and licenses. But then we started talking about trademarks somehow, which isn't part of the class, but that's something that all of these students need to understand because they are starting projects, final capstone projects. And then so I said, oh, I have this podcast episode talking about trademarks and I have a lawyer who will give you a discount on your trademark process because it can be very expensive, but if you don't have the right person and you're grad students. And then some of them were asking more. They hadn't heard an episode that I did for the USC podcast on, you know, it was a workshop of how to start a podcast. And so some of them, I said, okay, here's the link for that one. But I love that I can refer back to my subject matter expertise, other people's, and I get to meet the most fascinating people, hear what's going on in the world of marketing, AI, Web3, you know, every other aspect, new funding streams, and get that knowledge. And then it's like getting your MBA all over again.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, talking to the smartest people who are summarizing years and years of thinking, I mean, you can't, it's great from that perspective. And again, as a teacher, it's great because, again, you get all of these nuggets of information. And the wonderful thing about AI, so if you go onto my kuna.no website, you'll see your page. It's quite small. I need to probably adjust it. But I do a summary of the talks that I've done with all of my guests. So there are this great sound bites and great nuggets from very smart people. And they're very happy to share it because the thing is, if you and I are talking about it, it's out there. It's not some magic. It's not some secretive cult where we are, you know, you have to speak our language and you have to eat certain things. The information is out there. So we're just building. And, you know, I really feel that teachers should do podcasts like this in order to just get exposure to what's happening. Because the market, as you know, is changing at such a pace that how is it humanly possible to keep up with trends if you're not speaking to people who are actually at the coalface?
Yeah, everything changes so quickly. I look at the materials that they are assigned that were already pre-assigned and I'm like, oh, okay, what am I going to pull in this week? That will be something new because that has completely changed from what they read. So some of this stuff might be foundationally correct, but the way we use technology. So
without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
That actually tees up my next question. What do you think of right now? What are the emerging trends you're seeing in digital? And I know that we are moving towards Web3 pretty rapidly, probably more rapidly than people realize. So I'd love for you to talk about that and how you work with brands on these strategies.
So I want to take a step back quickly and just talk about the foundational concept that I use in my business and in all of my teaching, which is the customer journey. And yes, I'm sure my class will roll their eyes when they hear customer journey. But I feel if you understand the customer journey and understand where your messaging needs to fit in on the customer journey, 50% of your job is done. It really if you've just got that foundation. So any new technology, Web3, whatever it is, virtual reality, AR, all of these things, they're just little blocks that additions onto the customer journey. So it shouldn't frighten you. It should just be, okay, this fits in here on our customer journey. But when it comes to Web 3.0, and I'm actually going to start a separate podcast focusing specifically on Web 3.0 just to explain what it is, because it's very complicated from the outside. Yeah, what the hell is going on? So we'll be talking about from the foundations of Web 3.0. But if you think about when we started out our careers, I'm probably much older than you. So when I started, there's no Twitter, no Facebook. Yeah. I mean, Gmail wasn't a thing yet. And CD-ROMs were a big thing. Can you imagine CD-ROMs? And that was a big business.
I'm entering my fifth decade this year. So,
so new technologies is always going to come out. But what I think the difference between Web 3.0 and previous technologies has been is that if you look at traditional technology, it's sort of top down. And when you go to Web 2.0, there's a bit of interaction between the two. And now with Web 3.0, you've got ownership of the digital assets that you create. So your memes, there's a digital record that you've done something. And for example, with NFTs with the monkeys and things like that, it's a gimmick. But there are actual really good use cases for using NFTs for loyalty programs, for example. Right. So if you have this NFT, you get a discount. If you have this NFT, you can get that product when it launches. And it will help smaller businesses in the long run in terms of pre-selling content, pre-selling products and that. So if you're doing t-shirts, caps, hats, etc., you sell out your NFTs, you know there's a guaranteed market, and then you produce. So there's some interesting things there. And if we look at, now that I've got kids as well, if we look at kids using digital currencies like Robux and Fortnite and all of these online games, this next generation of consumers is already playing in that space. They don't know it yet, but they actually already are operating in the metaverse. And as soon as they get into the workforce in about 5 to 10 years' time, everything that we, Facebook, Instagram, all of this is going to, to be old-fashioned, to be like reading a magazine or buying a newspaper, the equivalent. They'll be talking to their friends online with VR headsets, buying things with cryptocurrency, getting NFTs, showing that they are part of this group, this tribe, etc. So the potential in that market, we might miss it because of our age group, but the next generation of students that we're teaching have to get their toe in the water. But the fundamentals, again, of how humans operate, you've got to get them aware of your product. You've got to get them to trial it. You've got to get them to buy it. You've got to get loyalty. Those things don't change, whether it's Web 3.0, Web 2.0, whatever it is. So I'm not worried about all of this new technology. I love it, but it'll probably take a few years for it to really make itself felt. But there's potentials for creating agencies, for creating products. And it's just getting easier and easier to integrate Web 3.0 into real life now.
Yeah. It's something that I'm not working in, but I've had you and a few other guests on to discuss AI and Web 3, and I'm studying AI for a master's degree right now. And so it's something I want to get more involved in, is the study and practice of all of these fun things that I haven't really played in yet. So
I must just say that, and it's amazing how quickly this industry has changed. I started a data science company in Malaysia in 2019, and that was before ChatGPT. I mean, there were rumblings of ChatGPT and these AI things, and we were playing around with AI, with Oracle and some big SaaS providers. And everything, the government was saying, we need more people coding in Python, we need coders, and I'm sure in the States as well, those truck drivers who are all fired, they can learn to code. Coding, I wouldn't tell my kids to go and code. Yeah. That's done. And that's only four years that entire category of people who went and learned Python and all of these fancy things, their jobs are going to be taken by AI. So again, there are some fundamentals we need to know in marketing and in business that don't change. And the technology, I wouldn't get too stuck into one particular technology if I was any young person right now.
Nice. What would you want if somebody is thinking about where they want to live, perhaps living in different countries, whether as a digital nomad or just moving from one country to another, becoming an entrepreneur? What is the best piece of advice that you would give them?
It will depend on your life stage, obviously. I think if you are young and single or unmarried, the options are obviously quite broad. You obviously need a place with good internet. You need a place that's nice and safe. But I think a place with a good expat community for young folks, well, for anyone really, is really good. So anywhere like Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur was amazing. There were folks from all around the world. Nigeria was great, fantastic folks from around the world. It depends if you want different or you want just a little bit, you know, just a little bit of spice. So it depends on that. I mean, Nigeria is a wonderful place, but it's not for everyone. And Norway is great, but 6 months of the year, it's unlivable. Ooh. So, you know, we should live in Portugal for the other 6 months, other 6 months of the year. But it's about networking. And the great thing with being a digital nomad now is that you can go to a Regis office anywhere in the world. So I'd make sure that you have an office subscription so that you have a routing of your calls and your emails and you have a place to sit. Because one challenge with being an entrepreneur is focus. And it's very good to sit at a desk sometimes and just focus. And if you don't have that, you can't sit in a coffee shop your entire life. You feel people are looking at you, the staff always checking, are you going to buy another coffee? You're always feeling a little bit that you're an imposition. So I think having a little shared office space is always good. Yeah. So, I mean, those are the basic things. Other than that, it depends on your, and if you like eating weird things or if you like eating not weird things. I think that could be the distinction. Do you like eating good food or do you like eating the food that's not going to poison you? So,
And that could be very different for each person individually.
Absolutely.
So, do you have a quote, family motto, mantra, words that you live by?
The one that my dad always uses, God helps those who help themselves. So you've got to go and make your own way in the world. So nobody wakes up in the morning saying, what can I do for Nicholas? Right. So you've got to be motivated. You've got to wake up every morning with a smile and say, no matter how terrible things are, you've just got to get up and go and do it. And yeah, so to be awful, that Nike thing of just do it is honestly the best motivator in the world. You've just got to get up and do something.
Yeah. Yeah. Very true. We don't get anything done or accomplished by sitting there. And even to the point where a lot of companies might create a product or create a website, but then they don't do anything with it. And that's where we come in. So
absolutely.
Nicholas, this has been such a wonderful conversation. And I know that you have a couple of websites. You have kuni.no. We'll have that in the show notes, as well as wunderband.com. And you are making yourself accessible. People want to talk through brand strategy with you. So thank you very much for that. And it was just such a pleasure to see you again. It's been a little bit, and to hear from you. So thank you so much for being here today.
It's always a pleasure.
And to the audience, if you are watching or listening to this episode on whatever platform it is, I'll be back again tomorrow with another amazing guest. So thank you for being here. Don't forget to leave a rating or review, and we will make your day a little bit brighter again tomorrow with some other expert advice.
Want more? Check out amplifywithannika.com or follow me on socials at amplifywithannika.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
As we close out today's episode, I want to thank Simplified again for making it possible. For all marketers and creators out there, Simplified is your ally in effortlessly crafting on-brand content with design and video AI. Discover how AI can enhance your creative process at simplified.com. Start for free and elevate your content game. Thanks for listening, and here's to your next creative breakthrough.